do is win, 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 no matter what. Got money on my mind, I can never get enough. And every time I step up in the building, everybody hands go up. And they stay there. And they say yeah. And they stay there. Cause all I do is win, win, win. And if you go in here, put your hands in the air.
And good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is the inaugural Bring on the Cats podcast. On tonight's show, you have TB, or Ty, and also our contributing writer, Panjandrum. Everybody, say hello to the crowd.
Hello.
Okay, that's not how I'm really going to talk the entire time, but I felt like our inaugural podcast really needed a special introduction, so I decided to use my radio voice. I am TB. I am Ty from Bring on the Cats. That is Panjandrum. We're here tonight. We're going to talk a little bit of K-State sports. I guess the first thing to start off with is last weekend's game in Columbia, Missouri. Unfortunately, a loss for the Cats, 38-28 at the hands of the Missouri Tigers on senior day. Cold, windy day at Faroupe Field. Cats looked pretty good in the first half. Did not show up at all for the third quarter. Apparently, somebody told them that they could take the third quarter off and then come back and play in the fourth quarter. And Missouri ends up pulling out the victory. I'm going to throw it over to Panjandrum and let him give you his thoughts on the game.
Well, I mean, I guess my long-lasting thought from the week is it's just kind of marinated as I'm now more confused about this team and what their offensive philosophy is after the 10th game than I was after the first game. It just seems very strange. Now all of a sudden, you know, 10 games into the year, we're looking at platooning quarterbacks when it's pretty obvious that you have one quarterback that has sparked the offense in two games, one in a win over Texas, the other to what should have been a first half tie against Missouri. It seems to me like we should probably start Klein. We should probably play Klein all the time. No, he's not much of a throwing quarterback. At least you have to say that because Bill Snyder has only let him throw 10 times in two games.
That's approximately right. I don't have the numbers, but it sounds probably about right. It might be even on the strong side.
Somewhere in there. So, I mean, if you, on average, let them throw a quarterback throw five times a game, it's pretty small sample size. And considering last game he was 4 for 6, so, I mean, it wasn't that bad. I broke it down on one of the message boards where I kind of did, you know, yards per play when each of the quarterbacks were in. Just going by the ESPN play-by-play in memory, it looked like it was almost even. It was about approximately 36 for Klein and I think 34 for Kaufman. We gained about 260 yards, if my math is right, for Klein, and it was, you know, somewhere in the 180s or something for Kaufman. It broke out to 7.2 yards per play for Klein and 4.8 for Kaufman, give or take maybe a tenth or two-tenths of a point. And that 7.2 yards per play actually would have outgained Missouri's total yards per play for the entire game. So it just kind of seems to me that offensively, the choice is pretty clear. And I think, you know, if you go through the open game thread on the site, that the sentiment of the fans is pretty clear for reasons unbeknownst to most critical thinking people. We seem to continue to, we being the coaching staff, has a love affair with Kaufman that's kind of unexplainable. But overall, the better team won. I think we all expected Missouri to win, especially on senior day. I mean, Gary Pinkel cried. So, you know, obviously that's just tears of heaven just shining down and giving them great luck. So I really don't, I didn't anticipate a win. It's kind of upsetting because I think we could have or could have made it more competitive had we not been so out of sync offensively. Overall, good effort and probably at least it's something to build on going to Colorado.
You know, from that perspective that you just mentioned, that kind of actually reminds me of the K-State-Missouri basketball game that opened the Big 12 season last year. And I remember, you know, of course you remember you and I got together and watched that at a bar up in the Northlands in Kansas City. So we were solidly in Mizzou country. And I remember walking out after that game and talking in the parking lot before we left. And I was like really down in the dumps after that game. Like I was really disappointed that we lost. And I remember you said, you were like, look, did you expect to win this game? And I had to admit, no, I really did not think that we would win that game because Missouri is a tough opponent last year and they play a tough style to get ready for. And they're tough at Mizzou Arena. I mean, they really are good at home. I mean, you know, you look at teams that have good home court advantages, and Mizzou definitely plays very well on their home turf. So I look at this football game kind of from the same perspective. I feel like, you know, I really did not think going into this game that we had much of a chance to win. Now, the fact that they lost to Texas Tech the week before gave me some hope, but, I mean, Lubbock is really the Bermuda Triangle of the Big 12. You just can't predict what's going to happen down there in a night game. So no, I really didn't expect to win, but when you sit through and watch the game and you see how it unfolds and all the things that could have happened or maybe should have happened, you know, the fumble at the 1 yard line is something that, I mean, if any of you ever meet Bill, from Rock M Nation, you will have to buy him a beer and just let him start talking about what I was like at that very moment. Because let's just say that from the reactions of the Mizzou fans around me, it was very entertaining to them. So, you know, with all the mistakes that we made and all the really dumb things that we did, to have a chance where if a tight end could have caught a wide open pass that was right on his hands for a 2-point conversion late in the game, you know, that at that point we would have been within, you know, a possession, would have been within 8 points. We have a kicker who's good at onside kicks. And, I mean, you know, 70 seconds left and Carson Kaufman trying to run the 2-minute drill is certainly far from a guarantee, but we would have had a chance. And it really would have, you know, you really would have had to admit as an outsider, K-State really had a chance to win that game at that point. Now, you know, you look back on it at this point, it's kind of like, well, they made it look closer than it really was. And to an extent, that's true. But man, you just look at that and you think about all the blown opportunities and just kind of wonder what could have been, I think.
So I've got a quick question for you, and I'll let you pose it back to me.
Okay.
But what would you consider to be the most disappointing aspect of that game?
To me, the toughest, well, I will say that I was very disappointed in the decision to start Kaufman. I think it was clear from the week before at Texas that despite his deficiencies as a passer, Colin Klein makes this offense go. Now, you can say what you want about Texas defense and Texas as a team having quit on themselves, but Texas defense is fifth in the country. You know, I mean, they're not a bunch of slouches out there. Maybe they've quit, I don't know. But the offense was clearly better with Colin Klein running it against Texas. I was very disappointed. Now, I don't know, maybe those first two possessions, you know, maybe if we jump out to an early lead or we at least are keeping pace with them early, maybe that changes the complexion of the game. I don't know if that made as much of a difference as the turnovers. Now, you cannot fault Carson Kaufman for the one where he gets hit like, you know, like he got hit by a Yugo, basically, when Alden Smith blows him up from behind. You know, I don't think very many quarterbacks hang onto the ball in that situation. He got hit by a truck.
Right. Going straight down Highway 59.
Yeah, going down Highway 59 with reckless abandon. So that one, I can't fault Carson Kaufman. The fumble Ruski play, I don't know why it was called. I don't understand it. But the reason that we lost the ball was it wasn't because of the play call. It was because our running back didn't secure the ball properly. So that's frustrating because that's such a simple thing, ball security. But, you know, again, the play call was not the reason that the ball was turned over there. You know, I would say probably between starting Carson Kothmann and the turnovers is probably my biggest disappointments in that game. And now I will pose the question right back to you because I'm interested to hear what you have to say.
Blaine Gabbert rushed for 89 yards.
Yeah, I completely forgot about that in assessing our offensive problems.
I mean, you know, that's the one thing that kind of, I think, has kind of gotten overshadowed this week. You know, as you kind of peruse the message boards, you peruse the discussions, everything has just been focused on the quarterbacks. I mean, you know, hell, I just let off with talking about the quarterbacks.
Right.
Blaine Gabbert has rushed for 171 yards this year, 89 against us. I mean, to me, that just kind of sums up everything. I mean, granted, Missouri offensively probably wasn't as potent as I thought they were going to be. So true to the, you know, MO of our defense this year. Pretty, it's just pretty, you know, bend but don't break, prevent them from scoring, let them just eat up yards. Which, you know, fine, they did that. They scored, you know, 31 points without, you know, the help of fumble recoveries. But 89 yards for the quarterback. I mean, that to me is just unbelievable for a guy that averages 17 yards a game. Actually, 17 yards a game after his performance against Kansas State. It's just shockingly awful. And I really feel like, and I know that I've probably been one of the ones to harp on this the most, and who knows, maybe I just can't let things go. But, you know, I really think this quarterback controversy is going to really overshadow the next two games, especially if it's not, you know, resolved. And if they go into the bowl game, I mean, we're going to have 4 or 5 straight weeks of who's going to start, who's going to start, how they're going to use the quarterbacks against, you know, whoever the bowl opponent is. Whereas, you know, this is kind of Chris Kosh sliding under the radar, like, oh, don't mind me and my 120th ranked rush defense. It just, the fact that Missouri was just so able to just move the ball at will on the ground with Gabbert, and they don't even, Gabbert doesn't even run. That's just, it still boggles my mind.
Yeah, I'll agree with you there. You know, we've been talking about this for years. You know, first it was kind of with Texas Tech, and now it's with Missouri. But we just have not ever figured out how to even slow down offenses like Texas Tech's under Mike Leach and like Mizzou's under Gary Pinkle and Coach Yost. You know, Mizzou, you know, while granted they don't have the greatest talent at wide receiver, certainly that they're used to having, you know, they have pretty good athletes out there, and my God, Gabbert's got a cannon for an arm. I mean, it's truly impressive to watch him throw the ball. And he's just a mountain in the pocket, too. So, you know, I actually, you know, from a total yard standpoint and from a total points allowed standpoint, I'm not in despair over the defensive effort, but I will certainly agree with you that almost allowing 100 yards to Gabbert, and, you know, credit where credit's due, Gabbert took advantage of opportunities when they presented themselves, but at some point you've got to look in the mirror and be like, wow, why are we, you know, why is their quarterback, you know, of all the weapons, of all the people that can beat us on Mizzou, their quarterback ran for, you know, almost 100 yards and you know, scored a touchdown. I don't remember how long the touchdown run was, but 30-plus yards, I want to say.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I don't know. I definitely agree. You know, we can't lose focus on the fact that our defense is nowhere near what we want it to be, and that certain, you know, you know, if we have a defense, you know, circa 1998 through 2003, then, you know, I think that we've got a lot better chance of winning games like this. That goes without saying. But, so, yeah, I definitely agree that the defense needs to, you know, we've got to keep our eye on that as well. One thing I want to throw out here before before we wrap up the Mizzou game and move on to Colorado is I actually made the trip down to Columbia. It was the first time I've been to a football game there, and I hung out with a lot of the people from the Rock Am Nation crew. I hung out with Ross, RPT, and Bill from the site, The Beef, who he and his wife run a tremendous tailgate, and they're very generous with welcoming, even an opposing fan in. And I have to say I had a great time there. I was very surprised. I've heard my entire life from people from just about every fan base in the Big 12 that Mizzou's fans are right up there with Colorado's. It's just about the worst. I didn't have a single fan say a word to me. Maybe that's a product of it being obvious that I'm with Mizzou people, or, you know, maybe, I don't know, maybe the perception is just wrong, but I had a great time. The bar district on Friday night was as much fun as you can have in a college town. And, Froat Field is, it's not the nicest stadium. It's not like a brand new stadium with all the bells and whistles, but it's a very nice place to take in a college football game, except for the fact that it was very cold and the wind was blowing across the field right at us. So
always uncomfortable.
Yeah. Yes, very much so. So anyway, let's put the past behind us and move on to the black and gold team to our west now. K-State makes the trip to Boulder, Colorado for apparently probably the final time. You can never rule out a future home and home, I guess, but at least for the foreseeable future, the final matchup between K-State and Colorado this Saturday at 1 o'clock at Folsom Field in Boulder. Again, I'm going to throw it over to you, Pan. Give me sort of your breakdown, your thoughts on this matchup.
Colorado's not very good. And I think that, last week's game against Iowa State is kind of an aberration. We talked about this, just briefly before this started. I really think that any time that you fire a coach and you bring in an interim coach, you get that sudden injection of, I don't know what you would call it, but football adrenaline that kind of brings you to life. It's something new, it's something different. We're being asked to do this in practice differently. I have absolutely no idea what goes on inside of a Colorado practice, but my assumption is that anything done by someone other than Dan Hawkins is probably a positive, procedural change. So, I think that there's also the chance, hey, we made this change. If we win out, then we can go to the bowl game. I think that there's probably an injection of positive energy, not crazy energy like Hawkins used to give. But Iowa State's a quality team. I give them a hard time, but they really are a quality football team, solid across the board. If not great, they're solid. So when they're held to -6 rush yards, that's something to raise your eyebrows to. But Colorado is not. It's not unheard of to run the ball against them. They are ranked in the 30s in terms of rush defense. They are ranked in the hundreds for pass defense. So, obviously we'll probably see a lot of Carson Kaufman. But they don't have a rushing quarterback, so you hope that goes in our favor because, Cody Hawkins can't run, but of course neither can Blaine Gabbert, so, that kind of goes out the window. My hope is that the initial high of having a new interim coach kind of wears off. I don't really see senior day at Colorado as a great motivator because they're going to have, 10,000 people there anyway. So it's not real. You're either playing for pride or what, and it's going to be the most awkward senior day in the history of senior days when Dan Hawkins is on the field with his son, assuming that that's what happens. So I don't know. I think there's going to be some weird awkwardness on the Colorado sideline when that happens. I think that there's going to be just a weird air in the stadium knowing that it's the final home game for Colorado in the Big 12. I think the steady hand of the K-State rushing attack, provided that we bring the rushing attack and put Klein in there, I really think that's enough to probably wear Colorado down if they can find a way to contain Hawkins. I don't see it being a big victory. I think K-State can probably win in the neighborhood of 7 to 10 points, probably kind of like a Baylor effort where it's probably not really pretty, but they can probably escape with a win. If so, that sets them up for a very likely 8-win regular season, which we would all do cartwheels over. But I definitely see K-State winning the game, but just not through a blowout. I think it'll just be probably the benefit of a lot of awkwardness and kind of coming down from that Iowa State high.
Yeah, I definitely agree that if K-State wins this game, it certainly won't be in an easy manner. You mentioned the sort of temporary high. I was kind of wondering if you were referring to the pounding of Iowa State that lame duck Ron Prince put on the Cyclones in his finale on the sidelines in Manhattan. That was kind of what was coming to my mind as you were mentioning that.
The most awkward game I've ever attended in my entire life.
I'm glad I wasn't at that one. I would have had a real hard time cheering anything at that game. But yeah, I'm right there with you on your takes. I think that, while I note that Colorado is much better against the run than they are at the pass, if you're K-State, you got to stick with what you're good at. You can't say, well, Colorado's not very good against the pass, so we're going to put our either mediocre passing quarterback, Carson Kaufman, back there, or our quarterback who we don't think can pass, but we don't really know, but we don't really want to find out because we're old men and we're set in our ways and we're scared of what he might do if he throws the ball around, quarterback out there. So, I think that a steady diet of Colin Klein and Daniel Thomas has to be the answer in this game. I don't know where the Wildcat formation went against Mizzou. It was, as I remember, I don't believe we ran it once. You can correct me if I'm wrong on that, but I don't believe we even ran it once.
I don't think they did. I know that they ran a kind of a trick play somewhere in the third quarter where I believe it was Kaufman. They took Klein out after first down, brought in Kaufman, and then tossed it to Daniel Thomas, who then tried a pretty nice-looking downfield throw. I thought that was Kaufman. Anyway, regardless, it was not in the Wildcat. I don't recall.
Right. And by the way, as a side note, the couple of passes that I've seen Daniel Thomas throw this year, well, I'll grant you that his accuracy leaves much to be desired. He throws an awfully nice ball. I mean, I know he was a quarterback in junior college, but we've seen a quarterback in Al Roberson in his early years who couldn't throw a spiral to save his life. And Daniel Thomas really throws a pretty nice ball. I guess that's neither here nor there because he probably won't get much of a chance to throw the ball, whether it be out of the Wildcat or off halfback passes or whatever. But, I don't know. Going out to Colorado is always a tough proposition for me. Winning in Boulder is tough, not necessarily because the crowd's all over you or anything like that, but you get that thin mountain air, the long road trip out there. I'm uneasy about this game, despite the fact that I feel like if K-State plays as it's capable of playing, it should be able to beat Colorado. Now, of course, as you mentioned, the Buffs are a complete wild card right now with Cabral taking over for Hawkins. But I just can't work up very much fear of an offense that's captained by Cody Hawkins. He's just not a very good quarterback. I mean, he is their version of Carson Kaufman, really.
Mm-hmm.
So
I agree.
So it's one of those things where every point that I make in our favor, I come back with a point in their favor. And it's going to be one of those kind of back and forth games. We're going to be thoroughly pissed off most of the time about certain things that happen. And I hope we pull it out, because if we pull it out, then barring the collapse of all collapses in Denton, Texas, we're looking at an 8-4 regular season. And I can't think of a single K-State fan who has a functioning brain who would not have taken 8-4 prior to this season beginning.
Oh, I would have taken it and ran with it like it was stolen.
Yeah, I think that I predicted 7-5 plus or minus one in the preseason, and I felt like I was maybe being a little optimistic. Like my reasonable expectation of the season, or my baseline expectation for the season, was just make a bowl game. And, you know, while we're not guaranteed an actual bowl game at this point, we are eligible and we probably will go to a bowl, even if we don't win another game. But, no, go ahead.
No, I think 8-4 is, it should put Snyder in the conversation for Big 12 Coach of the Year. He's going to lose some style points for the horribly executed fumble to Ruski play. But other than that, no, I think it's been a good year. I mean, even if they don't beat Colorado and they beat North Texas and go 7-5 and go bowling, I mean, you know, considering some of the horrible deficiencies on the team in terms of, you know, not to point out single players, but, you know, units. I mean, the defensive line has gotten a push. There's been a constant state of flux for the linebackers, where you're, you know, now starting to rely on a true freshman who's, you know, and Trey Walker has just done an outstanding job coming in and you know, doing some nice things. You have another true freshman and Ty Zimmerman stepping up and taking a starting safety position and doing some really nice things. I mean, there are a couple of bright spots, but overall that defense has just been, personnel-wise, coaching-wise, it's just been a gigantic nightmare. The quarterback position has been in such turmoil. 8-4, 7-5, that's just a fantastic effort.
I would agree, and now let's transition over to talking about what everybody is very, very excited for, and that is K-State basketball this winter, whether it be at Brandlage Coliseum or elsewhere. Cats open up the season last Friday, the regular season, with a not the most impressive outing against Jim Madison. 75-61 victory. I really didn't see very much of that game at all, as I was in Columbia enjoying the festivities. So I'll, you know, if you want to give me some quick thoughts on that game, I'd be all ears to hearing kind of your takeaway from that game.
The first thing that pops out in my mind is that the front court in that game kind of underwhelmed. But I think that's just a combination of Kelly not playing, or Freddie Espria kind of getting back into the motions of playing every day, playing competitive basketball again. Obviously, Wally Judge just needing to turn that corner. Jamar being out for a while. So, I mean, the front court is kind of, there's a lot of talent there. You saw yesterday against Virginia Tech that some of that kind of, it's starting to come around, maybe congeal a little bit more, but the front court was kind of disappointing. The positive side of it was the fact that the perimeter shooting in the James Madison game was better than we've seen, in my estimation, in a really long time. I don't even know how far back I'd have to go to really give you a team where I thought was probably deadly on the perimeter with more players. You know, last year, if you know, Pullen got hot or Clemente got hot, you know, you'd have a lot of perimeter pop. But I mean, at this point, Pullen can kill you. Russell has shown signs of being able to shoot. Spradlin can shoot. You know, Magruder can obviously shoot. So even if one or two of those guys has an off night, you can inject a couple of other guys and they're still going to be able to shoot the deep ball, which is really nice. That gives you a lot of flexibility. So James Madison game, very workmanlike, very taking care of business type of effort. They knew they weren't playing well, but they got it done and went and had a pretty impressive game against Virginia Tech to follow up. So it was okay. I'd give it a B minus with a B because of effort.
Okay, and that's a good transition into what everybody's very excited about, and that is last night's victory over Virginia Tech at the Octagon. 73-57 win for the Cats. One of the things that really sticks out to me from that game and from the previous game is James Madison scores 61 points, Virginia Tech scores 57 points. Any concerns that the defense under Frank Martin, and you know, I don't know that anybody expressed this concern, but just in case it was out there, there should not be any concern that the defense under Frank Martin is going away anytime soon, because you know they're really putting the clamps down, and again, especially against Virginia Tech, they put the clamps down on some pretty damn good players in Malcolm Delaney and Dorenzo. I forget his last name already. But Virginia Tech's guards were very good players and are very good players in the ACC, which, as we know, is second only to the Big East as, you know, God's choice of conferences in college basketball. So I was very impressed by the defensive effort from K-State. And, you know, man, when you look at winning a game against a top 25 team in the second week of the season, and you think about the fact that Jacob Poland played 2 minutes in the first half and Curtis Kelly didn't play at all, and K-State won the game essentially because they were much, much deeper than Virginia Tech. That really bodes well for games later in the season where presumably Jake will not get into foul trouble and Curtis Kelly will get his head right and get back in Frank Martin's, get back in Frank Martin's starting lineup. The depth that this team has is just gonna wear down a lot of opponents this year.
Yeah, and to kind of go back to your point on the defense, I think that there's a lot of that is the fact that this is the most athletic group I think that Frank's had in his 4 years. This even includes the Beasley Walker Sutton group. Because that team, you know, started Darren Kent, and they, you know, there were some, you know, holdovers from the Jim Woolridge era.
Yeah.
I mean, these are all Frank's guys now. I mean, you look at these guys, there's really not one out of shape guy in the bunch. Esprit has done a great job of getting physically fit, considering where he was when he stepped on campus. Even Jordan Henriquez Roberts is starting to look like an actual big man.
I can't say enough about how well he played last night.
No, he was
very good out there.
So, I mean, I think the athleticism is what's wearing people down on defense. And I think, kind of like last year, I think I used the metaphor several times, you know, teams take on the demeanor of their coach, especially no more so in basketball, in my opinion, where, you know, you get the hard-nosed, gritty nature of certain teams, the old Bob Huggins Cincinnati teams and the way that Bob Knight's teams played. You know, I'm kind of throwing Bob Knight in my head because of yesterday's game. You know, how they always played the crisp offense, very, you know, old-school style. Krzyzewski's group is always a very intelligent bunch just because, you know, Krzyzewski's a very intelligent guy. You know, Frank's kind of a brawler. He's kind of a street fighter. I mean, this is a bouncer. This is a guy that, you know, he's gonna probably fight you and wear you down. And, you know, to me, when I watch K-State play, it's hard, it's physical. And, you know, you go out to the great website, statsheet.com, and you kind of look at the statistical breakdowns of these games, you really see the score trending in a lot of these K-State games where the team will stay with K-State for a while, then they just kind of start trailing and plateauing in the second half, and you can kind of see teams hit that wall, and then K-State makes that second half run, partially because of depth, but partially because of how they play. I mean, it takes a toll on you mentally. I mean, you play basketball, you know, I played, I know. When you can't get the ball inside, and you're afraid to drive because you have this 7-foot behemoth with the wingspan of a, you know, California condor out there swatting everything away, or you just want to get the ball inside, but this guy is just manning up on you on the perimeter. So every time you try to make an entry pass, it is just killing you. I mean, you try to do that for 40 minutes, it just wears on you. And I think we've seen two very strong examples of a K-State team that has just probably not played very good games. They still look like a team that has almost half a new roster this year. But just because of the athleticism and depth and their style of play, the other teams just can't keep up for 40 minutes. For 30 minutes, maybe. For 40 minutes, I don't see it, which is why I think, you know, we're going to learn a lot about this team when they go to Kansas City for the CBE.
I agree. Going back to one of your points, I'm pretty sure that Frank Martin would not have to wear me down in a fight. I'm pretty sure it'd be over very quickly. And you bring up a point that I wanted to talk about a little bit. You talk about how we, you know, K-State really does a good job of wearing down teams in the second half. Part of the way that they wear down other teams, and we saw it very prominently in the game against Virginia Tech yesterday, is they get other teams in foul trouble. And when you're Virginia Tech and you only go about six or seven deep, that's a real issue when you've got guys racking up two, three fouls in the first half, picking up their fourth foul early in the second half. And, you know, before you know it, you're looking at losing two or three guys out of your starting lineup, and or if not losing them, seeing them sit significant portions early in the second half, which, you know, is effectively losing them. So, but that gets back to the thing that has been the talking point among K-State fans, among Kansas City sports talk radio, whoever you want to ask. Everybody has an opinion about K-State shooting free throws. And a team like K-State, you know, they led the country in free throws attempted last year, and they led the country by a lot in free throws attempted last year. It really was not close. I made the point in the post-game thread last night because K-State is shooting just a hair over 50% this year from the free throw line. And I will grant you that that is awful. You know, for college basketball players who are so good at so many things, to shoot 50% from the line, it really surprises me that the free throw shooting is that bad. I mean, they almost shoot three-pointers as well as they shoot free throws, right? In fact, the guys that I was watching the game with yesterday, we were joking when Rodney Magruder got fouled shooting a three. We were like, can he just have one shot unguarded from the three-point line? I'd rather let him shoot one from the three-point line unguarded than have him shoot three free throws. Because I think, you know, one shot, who knows what might happen. But I'll take my chances with that over the free throws. But, you know, when you look at free throws a little more deeply, as I pointed out, okay, K-State's only making about a little over 50% of their free throws. But they've still made more free throws this year than have their opponents, who are shooting a significantly better free throw percentage. I think they're shooting in the 65 to 70% range. Now, I'd love to see K-State shooting in that range because they'd be just killing people right now if they made that many. But the bottom line is, if you're just isolating that one aspect of the game, K-State's still scoring more points than the other team. And on top of that, they're getting the other team in foul trouble by getting to the free throw line like they are. So you really kind of get a two-part, in, you know, you get two good things out of that. You get two what should be very easy shots that, you know, you should, you know, you really should make 65 to 70% of those as a team. Now, maybe they'll improve as the year goes on. They certainly improved last year, if I recall correctly, as the year went on. But the bottom line is they're getting those easy shots, and they're getting a lot of them because they're so much more athletic. They get the ball into the paint. They get fouled. They go to the line. They shoot too. Now, you know, yeah, you'd rather have, you know, an easy layup where you get an easy 2 points like that. But, you know, if you're talking about this possession and that possession, and, you know, if you break possessions down individually and talk about points per possession, you know, I'm perfectly happy with the team driving into the lane, getting fouled, and taking their chances from the free throw lines because, you know, even if you make one of two, well, you got a point out of that possession. And, you know, over the course of a game and over the course of the season, you know, I think that even if they don't get the free throw percentage, you know, even if they don't get it to much above 60, or, you know, even if they get it to just around 60, you know, I'm not worried about the free throw shooting yet. You know, maybe I will be if we shoot 45% against somebody and lose. But at this point, as long as they keep getting to the free throw line, I'm not going to have too much of a problem with it.
No, I only care about free throw shooting in March. I really think that when you're in a one-and-done kind of situation like you are in the NCAA tournament, I think you have that one really bad free throw shooting game. That's the 45%, 50% game that you kind of speak of where, you know, that's really gonna hurt you. But in terms of kind of what you said, you know, my main point is at least you're drawing fouls. Because when you draw fouls, players get into foul trouble. And what happens when you get into foul trouble? I mean, when you play ball, when you're in foul trouble, the first thing that you do is you change the way you play. Consciously or not, you become less aggressive if it's early in the second half and you've got three fouls. Because you have that thing in the back of your mind that says, not going to jump at him so hard, not going to bump up on him so hard if he's, you know, if he's posting up on me because I don't want to draw number four. Or if I've got four, I'm sure as hell not going to be extremely aggressive. So now all of a sudden that just leaves you as an offense with a lot more options. So, I mean, as long as K-State is drawing fouls, I don't care about the percentage. As long as they're outscoring other teams from the free throw line, I don't care about the percentage. When we get to March, I'm hoping that the team average gets up whatever these shanks are that they've got right now, because 51%, I mean, statistically, that just cannot be for the rest of the year. I just don't see how that's possible. No team can be that bad at shooting free throws. And now watch them prove me wrong.
Right.
But, I mean, I would love to see them get more into the lower 60s. That would be a perfectly acceptable rate for me, just kind of given the national averages and everything. So, you know, I think you hit on all the points. I think the most important thing is drawing the fouls. And, you know, I just hope and cross your fingers that they get hot come tournament time.
Well, and that's another thing. I mean, I guess you could dismiss some of this as, well, you know, drawing fouls is kind of a fickle thing. You know, some games you're not going to draw them. But the bottom line is K-State's shown over a fairly extended period of time that they do draw fouls. They really do draw a lot of fouls. So I don't think that's as much of a concern. Before we wrap this up, let's kind of go through just maybe one or two other things that from the Va-Tech game yesterday that you saw that you liked. I know we've already hit on, you know, the depth of the team and the development of, well, you know, we mentioned Jordan Henriquez Roberts, who just, I mean, he looked great out there. He rebounded very well. You know, he showed a knack to get the ball in the hoop, around the hoop. One thing I'm going to touch on, and everybody's been talking about this a lot, but the way Will Spradling played in that first half with Jake out gave me a lot of confidence for the rest of the year, and it did it in two ways. Now, Jake is probably not going to get in that bad of foul trouble very often this year. I can't recall more than one or two times last year where he was really, truly in foul trouble. So it probably isn't going to happen much this year. But let's just say that we go to Lawrence and he gets two ticky-tack fouls right off the bat and has to sit most of the first half. It's good to know that Will Spradling can come into the game and, if not be a game changer like Jake, at least he's not going to go out and lose the game for us. He's not going to commit a bunch of silly turnovers. He's not going to get sped up and get taken out of the game. And, you know, you can say what you want, but, you know, KU's got some good players on their team, but their guards are not better, or not, at least not significantly better than Virginia Tech's guards. So I really feel like you can probably extrapolate Spradling's performance to just about anybody. And, you know, I pick KU because, you know, we have a great history of our best player ending up on the bench after two early fouls there. But that was definitely one big positive that I took away from this game was the play of Will Spradling. You know, for a true freshman to do that against a team like Va-Tech, I thought was very encouraging.
I agree. I think that Spradling's performance was probably the brightest spot of the game yesterday, and obviously something that's going to give people a lot of hope going forward, especially, you know, in post Jake Pullen-less K-State. I kind of will reserve the one game, the litmus test that I'm looking for in terms of Will Spradling, is I want to see how he does at Mizzou Arena.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that's the one game where a freshman could probably get rattled no matter how good they are. And I don't want to take anything away from him. I just think that's probably the most hostile environment with the toughest defense that he's going to see all year. So I'm really interested. That's the one game I'm kind of circling on the calendar to see how Spradling does there. You know, my biggest surprise, positive surprise, and I'm going to kind of cop out here and do, you know, kind of a twofold and give them both kind of props. Obviously, Martavius Irving. I think his final 3-point stats were, I think he was 3 for 5.
Yeah, I think that's right.
You know, Martavius, for a guy that kind of came in as a late addition to his recruiting class and really was brought in, or presumably brought in, the fans all kind of agree that he was brought in because of, as a defensive specialist, especially on the perimeter. You know, that guy, he hits big threes. He plays solid defense. He doesn't turn the ball over. He's just, he does the dirty things that you want a guard to do. He gives you good minutes. I'm really impressed with Martavius Irving. And then, you know, on the other hand, you have Nick Russell, who I think a lot of fans kind of wrote off as, well, he was really one of the, you don't want to say this about him because he's, you know, probably a good kid, you know, a bust of the last recruiting class. I mean, he really didn't see a lot of minutes. His minutes weren't really meaningful. It almost seemed like the coaching staff was kind of riding him pretty hard. You know, all of a sudden he goes out and plays big minutes in the last couple of games, hits some big shots, looks good on the floor. I'm just really impressed with the improvement by, you know, the entire sophomore class, but specifically with the sophomores on the perimeter. I mean, you knew it's a matter of time before Wally Judge becomes a force. You knew Jordan Henriquez Roberts, with his size and his athleticism for a guy that big, was going to be a potentially a very solid contributor, if not more than that. But, you know, you kind of had a mixed bag when it came to those guards, and they've really stepped up this year. I don't really think it's a question as who's going to stand beside Jake more now, and I guess you kind of change the tone as, wow, who's going to stand beside Jake? Because I think there's something about each one of their games that will either complement him or bring some sort of really large net positive to the floor.
Definitely agree with both of those. I love the fact that Martavius is becoming a threat from the perimeter, hitting the shots now, because really last year his offensive game was kind of lacking. He did all those things defensively and hustling that you want to see, but he was not much of a threat on the offensive end, at least. And the way he's shooting the ball early this year, it looks like he really put his time in during the offseason, getting a lot of shots up. And as far as Nick Russell, you know, I was probably one of the people that was as high on him as anybody initially, because he just looks so smooth out there. He's a big guard. He's very smooth with the ball. He never seems hurried. Even as a freshman, he never seemed sped up. It just didn't seem like he ever picked up the defensive rotations to Frank's liking. And the fact that he's been getting the minutes that he's been getting makes you think that, maybe he's starting to get that, and maybe he's picking up on that. And, you know, if that's the case, then I definitely agree with your assessment of, you know, it's more like which one of these guys on a given night is going to lead the charge with Jake, rather than is there going to be anybody to lead the charge with Jake. So, yeah, it's very exciting going, you know, Presbyterian Thursday should be an easy win. And then, man, next week in our city, Pan, CVE Classic down at the Sprint Center. Gonzaga the first night, lost to San Diego State. You know, looks like a winnable game. You know, I mean, I certainly think that the way, that as good as this team is, you know, pretty much any game is winnable this year. But, you know, it looks like pretty good prospect for winning that game, getting into the final, and you know, hopefully getting a shot at Duke. You know, I'd love to get a shot at the number one team in the country.
Okay, pop quiz before we move on.
This is going to be awful.
You can't get on the internet and look. Who is, like I did, who is leading the team in rebounds right now?
Oh, boy. Let's see.
You're searching right now.
No, I really am not. I'm looking at the ceiling because I have no idea, and I'm trying to figure out who to guess. I'm going to say, this is wrong, Jamar.
Wrong. Rodney McGrew.
Rodney Mack. Yeah. I was talking with a guy who has covered K-State in the past a little bit yesterday, and he said that Rodney puts more time in after, like, he would go into the locker room and do interviews after the game, and, you know, 2 hours later he was leaving, and Rodney was out there shooting, was still out there on the court shooting. Rodney puts his time in, and you can really tell it because he got a lot of playing time last year, and he looks really good this year.
He is. Just to kind of let everyone know out there, his stat line right now, 11 points, 8.5 rebounds, 3 assists.
Yeah.
Not to take anything away from Dom Sutton, who gave a lot to the K-State program, but when we wondered, well, like, where Dom's numbers going to come from, where are you going to replace all that, they've all increased.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Just the 11 points alone right there, I mean, that's probably, what, 8 more points per game than Dom average? Maybe not 8, but...
About 4.
Okay, 4. And then the assists, I mean, I don't, you know, Dom maybe, what, average 1 or 2 per game? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can't say enough about Rodney McGruder. He is going to really be an X factor for this team.
Just thought I'd throw that out there. His stat line was very, very impressive to me.
Well, it was a great question because obviously I had absolutely no idea what the right answer was. I knew that Jamar was not the correct answer, but I had to say it because I really just couldn't think of anybody else. So anyway, with that, congratulations, Pan. You got me. We're going to wrap this up. This is going to hopefully become a thing that we do every week. We plan to do it every week. We're going to have our other front page contributors, Bracket Cat and K. Scott Bailey, on in the future. I can only imagine that when we have 2 more people and me rambling on like this, we will probably have about a 2.5-hour podcast on our hands. I promise in the future we'll try not to go that long, but thanks for listening, thanks for reading, and for Panjandrum and Ty, have a good evening, and go Cats.